Today, Smashed. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, this post covering finance and property news. Well, now we know Australia's annual GDP growth rate fell to its lowest level since December 1991. That's outside of the pandemic, of course, as consumers hunkered down in the face of elevated borrowing costs and stubbornly sticky inflation. Australia's annual GDP growth rate has slowed markedly from a decade average of around 2.4%, partially, of course, due to the RBA's rate tightening campaign through 2022 and 2023, targeting inflation. Cash rate is currently at a 12-year high of 4.35%, and policymakers have signalled they're in no rush to cut it anytime soon. This weak growth is the cost of getting inflation under control, said Alex Joyner, the chief economist at IFM Investors. With the RBA's policy setting likely to remain unchanged for the remainder of the year, the risk is second half growth disappoints expectations of a modest recovery, he said. Governor Michelle Bullock, of course, last month said that it was premature to think about easing, and her deputy Andrew Hawser last week reinforced that view, saying that inflation is still a bit stickier in Australia than in countries like the US. The RBA reckons that the June quarter will be the low point of the slowdown, predicting the annual expansion will accelerate to 1.7% by the end of the year, before peaking up to 2.5% in late 2025. I guess we'll see about that. Anyway, Australia's second quarter GDP was worse than economists had expected, growing by only 0.2% over the quarter to be up only 1% year over year. The result missed analysts' expectations of a 0.3% quarterly rise. With Australia's population still growing aggressively through net overseas migration, the population increased by 0.6% in the second quarter, meaning that per capita GDP declined by another 0.4%. In fact, Australia's per capita GDP has now declined for 6 consecutive quarters, and 7 of the past 8 quarters to be down 2% from its peak. As you know, if you've been following my surveys, the household sector is hurting especially, as higher household earnings were partially offset by an increase in income tax payable and mortgage payments. And so despite the population surge, household spending actually fell 0.2% in the second quarter. And that's dropping 0.1 percentage points from GDP growth. Discretionary consumption was hit particularly hard. This puts a number on the political pain of falling living standards from the inflationary cost of living squeeze made worse for mortgage borrowers by those RBA higher interest rates. While Labour has sought to take the edge off all of this through its various handouts, rejigging tax cuts and household power bill subsidies, you cannot avoid the fact that the dirty job of getting aggregate demand back in line with aggregate supply is hitting some, but not all, households very hard. The important household consumption per capita declined 2.4% from its December 2022 peak, again highlighting that the economic cake is being cut into smaller slices, leading to the long and brutal per capita recession. Productivity remains in the gutter, also making the RBA's inflation fight trickier, with today's data showing that GDP per hour worked fell further last quarter. That's a concerning trend for policymakers, given productivity growth is crucial to higher living standards and sustainable pay rises. While Wednesday's data showed that the household savings ratio held at 0.6%, having slipped from a peak of 24.1% back in June 2020, it underscores the limited financial cushion available to many Australians, though some are benefiting from strong savings returns and income growth, highlighting the fact that Australia is actually a two-speed nation. Service exports rose 5.6% in the second quarter and followed falls in the previous two periods. It was led by education-related travel service, particularly from a rise in average spending. The only real saving grace was government spending, which helped to push gross domestic product 0.2% from the prior quarter. And in fact, the proportion of the economy which is government-led reached a new, if non-productive, high. The data showed government spending climbed 1.4%, led by programs for health services, hence the 0.3 percent points to GDP growth. So while record federal government spending on public servant wages and ballooning social programs is prolonging the Reserve Bank's inflation fight, Treasurer Jim Chalmers says the economy will be going backwards without it.
Without government spending, without growth in government spending, there'd be no growth in our economy at all. That is primarily health spending. Public final demand growth is still lower than what we saw under our predecessors, but it's making a useful contribution when it comes to the June quarter. Now, this justifies the way that we've managed the economy responsibly. Fighting inflation as our primary concern, but doing that without slashing and burning in a budget, which is in a budget and in an economy which is already weak and when people are already doing it tough.
But let's be clear, the main driver of economic growth over the past year was surging federal government spending, which hit an equal record 11.8% of GDP last quarter. The only time federal government spending has been larger was in the early stages of the COVID-19 pandemic. And the national accounts also revealed that recurrent government spending, government consumption spending, grew in real terms by a very strong 4.7% over the past year, reflecting more household handouts, higher healthcare spending, including the NDIS, and fatter federal and state public service wage bills. Now, the crux here is that with productivity stalled, the economy just can't grow any faster than the dawdle rate of the past year without risking more inflation. That means the Reserve Bank won't be making any cuts to the 4.35% cash rate before Christmas, as the governor has made clear, even with the economy's weak 0.2% June quarter expansion. We need to strike the right balance, and we are. It should never be some kind of free-for-all, the public spending, and it's not, Chalmers said. So while the Treasurer complains that the 1% annual GDP growth, apart from the pandemic, the softest since Paul Keating's early 1990s recession, is a result of the economy being smashed by the RBA's 13 cash rate increases, the truth is the economy also is overheated because overall spending is still higher than the economy's ability to produce more goods and services. It's like Scotty in Star Trek. They're pushing the engines beyond full capacity. Something will break. It simply can't grow any faster without the excess demand spilling over supply and stopping inflation falling from the 4% or so into the central bank's 2 to 3% target. Thus, according to the RBA, a period of spare capacity will be required to tame inflation, aka higher unemployment and interest rates high for longer. Last month's statement on monetary policy said that the current 4.2% jobless rate remains lower than estimated full employment. While the public spending stimulus has helped avoid a GDP contraction, which would show up, of course, in recession headlines, it also is keeping aggregate demand higher than aggregate supply, thus putting a floor under inflation and interest rates. Actually, the ABS said Australians cut back on air travel in June, which caused spending on transport to fall for the first time since September 2021. Residential home building activity has also been hammered by high interest rates, contracting 3% over the past year, and labour shortages and high material costs have prevented home builders from completing the existing pipeline of work approved during the pandemic, contributing to a sharp rise in insolvencies in the construction sector, and of course more homeless. But one item missing in action in Chalmers' press conference was a many mention of migration. No questions, no commentary about it, because of course more people coming into the country puts greater demand on the economy in terms of infrastructure, housing, transport and other services. But of course, we can't talk about that, can we? Simply put, the number of people in jobs grew nearly 390,000 or 2.8% over the year to June. But this significantly bigger workforce was only able to generate about 1% more goods and services over the year. In the end, it's supply side productivity, stupid, not more government spending that matters. And here, it's worth noting that former Reserve Bank board member Warwick McKibben said that Treasurer Jim Chalmers should be doing more to help get inflation under control instead of criticising the central bank's actions from the sidelines. To draw attention, when you're probably two-thirds of the problem, is a little problematic, Professor McKibben told the AFR. Remember that Dr. Chalmers declared last Sunday that the RBA interest rate rises were, quote, smashing the economy. The comments, of course, sought to shape how voters would perceive the data that came out today. Professor McKibben, an economist who served on the RBA board from 2001 to 2011, said the Treasurer should not be making those sorts of comments about the RBA. You want to think that the government and the central bank are working together in the same direction for the benefit of the country. To make those sorts of comments suggests that maybe there's some other agenda at work, and that's not helpful. Actually, Dr. Chalmers on Wednesday tried to clarify his language, saying his remarks were not intended to be an attack against the central bank, but merely a statement of fact. The RBA governor, Michelle Bullock, knows my views that there's weakness in the economy and that households are under substantial pressure, Dr. Chalmers said. Professor McKibben said one of the reasons why the private sector was weak was because the government had its finger in every pie and crowded out the rest of the economy. The reason we're not getting productivity improvements on the supply side is the government is creating all sorts of distortions and interventions in the economy, he said. And Shadow Treasurer Angus Taylor sees on the figures, arguing they show Dr. Chalmers was prolonging the inflation fight. It's clear from these numbers that the government is hitting the accelerator at the same time as the Reserve Bank is hitting the brake. And that is how you wreck the engine, he said. Yep, this is Tarrant Brooker's burnout economy all over again. Ernst & Young's chief economist Cheryl Murphy said the government spending was doing nothing to improve productivity, which fell in the June quarter and was stuck around pre-pandemic levels. This is the worst possible combination of statistics, as it means Australian businesses are gaining very little from government spending, which is focused on short-term costs of living relief for households and band-aid fixes to neglected problems, she said. The lack of coordination between fiscal and monetary policy means the path to low and stable inflation and therefore low interest rates is slower than it needs to be. Or, as I would put it another way, Chalmers is very fixated on the upcoming election and wants to claim that he's doing everything he can to ease the pains, despite the fact that he's one of the prime movers and one of the reasons why inflation is staying high for longer. Until productivity is sorted out, interest rates aren't going to come down. Until inflation comes down, interest rates can't come down. That is the simple arithmetic. And the bottom line is this: there is a fundamental problem in the head of the current government about how to deal with these matters. They are over-influenced by short-term political considerations rather than thinking long-term about what is strategically right for the country. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.